Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, the program that is devoted to those of you who have come to realize, or at least open to the realization, that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. On Fridays, we mix up our order. We're going to begin by either exposing religious myths in the case of Paul or talking about Yahweh's testimony. We ended the second hour yesterday discussing the book Questioning Paul. And that will be with Kirk. And then in the second hour, we're going to engage with IQ Al-Rasuli and talk about a number of topics. One is the first Democrat to publicly announce that he is going to vote against the Iranian nuclear deal, as well as another blogger was murdered in Bangladesh, and more Christians have been enslaved in Syria by the Islamic State. Hello, Kirk. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you doing?
Good. Well, yesterday we talked at length about the first of the three books that is available through Clarators.com, the website that is now providing all three books at really what I would say is a tremendous value.
I can attest to it. I mean, I should have bought stock in Hammermill Paper Company when I met you.
Having printed these things out yourself, know for a fact that the value is really rather extraordinary. Well, the advantage here with Clarators is that they will run the books to order, and it's the web address is www, of course, Clarator, Claitors.com. And when you go there, what you will find is a means to search. The easiest way, if you want to search for all three books, is you can search via my name, Craig Wynn, or you can search for the books individually. They're under Yada Yah, Questioning Paul, and Introduction to God. They are $39.95 apiece with Kirk's new covers on them, with exception of Yada Yah, which is a two-volume set, and it's $82 for the two volumes. Kirk and I make nothing on this. We do it as a service, and we're encouraging people to buy all three, read them themselves, and share them with others. The book on Questioning Paul, we were talking about yesterday, Kirk. It is 1,200 pages, and it begins with the most unanswerable questions, the questions that go right to the heart of Christianity, none of which can be answered. You know, why did God say, my God, why have you forsaken me? And why do Christians say that God died for their sins? And they don't have answers for those, and there are no answers for those things. You know, why did Yosha say the Father is greater than I? And how do Christians think that their God, the totality of their God, fit into this man who man managed to kill? The whole thing is preposterous. They don't even know his name. It wasn't Jesus. Wasn't anything close to being Jesus. The last name wasn't Christ. He didn't have a last name. He only has one name. It's Yahweh. And in this diminished manifestation, he is Yosha. And what this book does is just systematically go through everything Paul wrote in his first letter, which the portion we have just gone over was his rebuttal to the Jerusalem Council, where the disciples called him to account for his testimony, which they said was arrogant, fraudulent, worthless, deceitful. And Paul's arguments against them are either to change the subject, red herring, to throw in an issue that wasn't raised, or straw man. Well, I should say his primary argument, as we found out, is ad hominem, where he attacks the credibility of Yosha's witness. Yeah. 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 You know, one of the things we were just reading, of course, with the conclusion of Paul's rendition of his side of the Jerusalem Council, where the historical portrait of it is found in Acts, and Paul's recounting of it is found in Galatians, and they bear nothing in common. So either Luke is lying, and Luke interviewed the eyewitnesses who were there, or Paul is lying, or both are lying. But, you know, he says that the testimony of the disciples, those who were presumed to have a position with God and who were deemed important because of their experience with him, he said that their testimony was absolutely worthless and meaningless to him.
Mm-hmm.
Then he says that the same spirit that that worked through Shimon Kefesh to the circumcised worked through him for the message of uncircumcision.
That there's a masculine spirit.
Yeah, well, first of all, yeah, it was a masculine spirit, and he had the opportunity to use a neuter form or the feminine form in Greek, and he didn't do it. And the spirit, of course, is feminine. And he would have known that, except the spirit that represented him was not feminine. It was masculine. It was Satan. But what's interesting, if the same spirit were enlightening and empowering Shimon Kefesh, who Christians know as Peter, why was Peter's testimony worthless and of no value whatsoever to Paul?
That's a conundrum, isn't it?
Yeah, how does that work? I mean, just take a moment and just consider, you know, four sentences apart, three sentences apart. His testimony was completely worthless. He was inspired by the same spirit.
How do you become a PhD and never discover this?
Yeah, never even think about it. No, it's just read right on through it. Why? Because it's uncomfortable, because it's unpleasant, because it proves that religion is false, because it proves that Paul was a liar.
Mm-hmm.
Because it proves that as a Christian, you're irrational?
Yeah.
Which one of those?
You know, it's kind of it's sickeningly... what do you do with that?
Right.
I mean, like,
yeah. Now, I told you that one of the things that I had done with questioning Paul was to begin it with these 20 questions. And the reason I did so is the only... two or three people that I know that that were given the book that rejected the testimony that's in it only read three or four pages.
Mm-hmm.
I think one may have gotten to five pages. And it's a 1,200-page book, so I can tell you 100% of those who made it to the end of the book, no matter where they lived around the world, no matter how religious they may have been going in, came out wholly opposed to Paul, the New Testament, and to Christianity as a religion.
I gave up on Paul just listening to you on Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, and we were just covering verbally the first edition of the book. So the reason for the 20 questions is for those pastors, the Christians. Like you said, you heard a radio station where a pastor was saying, you know, a guy gave me a book that proves that Paul is a false prophet. Well, I think I have the only book that is devoted to that. There's online things. There's that demonstrate that, but I'm not aware of another book that systematically does this very thing. And so someone took the time to give it to him, and he rejected it out of hand because he wouldn't even consider it.
Right.
But if you give it to a Christian who is at least open-minded enough to get through the first chapter, they will immediately be confronted with these 20 questions. And now, rather than trying to question my credentials, and I don't claim any, I just said, look, the evidence speaks for itself.
Sure.
But that's the nature of people. They always want to, you know, question the message. They want to know, you know, what were my motives?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I only have one motive.
Who are you?
Yeah, I don't like liars. I don't like people being deceived. And I enjoy sharing the truth, particularly when it's important.
Mm-hmm.
That's my motive. I find pleasure in awakening people to pervasive lies that are extraordinarily destructive and to sharing the truth, which is extraordinarily beneficial. I find that pleasing and pleasurable. That's my motive. Now, the reason now with these 20 questions is, if there's any chance that evidence and reason is going to prevail with you, by the time you're at about the third one of these questions and you realize that your religion has lied to you about Jesus, about Christ, about Lord, about God's name, about the Trinity, about the totality of God possessing your Jesus, about God dying, about Christmas and Easter, about Sunday worship, about a institution called the church. And you get, you know, down past five or six of those.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize, wait a minute, he's made statements here that are factually based that prove that the core of my religious tenets are irrational, that they aren't true. And at that point, if you're an open-minded, reasonable person, who are you going to be questioning at that point?
Well, you would think you'd question your own beliefs and
right.
also the people who give them to you.
Right, and be extraordinarily motivated now to find the truth and to understand why you've been lied to.
Sure, I'd keep on going.
Yeah, I'd keep on going. And that's the way that it is written now. It does not give you an out. You before I'd make statements and they say, you know, that's just not possible because Paul says this and Paul says that. Mm-hmm. And now I just ask them questions. I said, let's go through these questions. See if you've got an answer for any of them, much less all of them. You know, why does God say, my God, why have you forsaken me before all of this happens? Why did he say in the Sermon on the Mount that that do not think that I've come to annul the Torah, to do away with it? Come to fulfill it. Not a single letter or stroke of a letter or part of a letter in the original Hebrew language is going to be done away with.
Mm-hmm.
So long as the heavens and earth exist.
And now you have also the Papyri 46 collection of things that as your footnote, so you can say, well, you know, from the oldest things ever, the same thing that is so wonderful about the Dead Sea Scrolls, is you can't go back and say, well, they misinterpreted something that was written before. It's not. It's exactly what he said.
No,
the oldest manuscripts ever.
Right. Yeah, we're providing five translations of every statement that Paul made. And one of those translations is a literal, amplified, accurate translation based upon the oldest manuscripts of Paul's letters, one that dates back to the late first century. So, Kirk, when you're confronted with these questions, which are unanswerable, what is the rational thing to do? Pretend they don't exist? To get mad at the person who brought them up to your attention? Or to ascertain what the truth is, since now you know you have been lied to, or maybe even an intermediate position, to go and investigate the truth for yourself, to determine whether or not, for example, there's any basis for Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Well, you go after the facts and you try to figure it out. I mean, unless you just don't think your soul is that important.
I guess so.
If you think your soul is that important, then there's nothing more important. The only thing that can live past us is our soul. So so why would you not want to spend time to find out whether you're in danger or not, or whether there is some truth to Yosha?
What if you were reading a book from somebody, and in that book there was testimony that was considered to be godly, and in the midst of this person's testimony, he said that he pretended to be those things that he was not. He pretended to be a Jew to those who were Jewish. He pretended to be a Gentile to those who were Gentiles. He pretended to be Torah observant to those who were Torah observant, and pretended to be Torah adverse to those who were opposed to the Torah, all to gain an advantage. Would you trust someone like that?
Well, you would hope he'd be at least send up a red flag. I mean,
well, why would give me a scenario where that would be trustworthy?
You can't. It just basically says I'm going to be all things to all people.
Yeah, I'm going to pretend to be what I'm not to take advantage of you. When a person says that they are sexually and aggressively, violently perverted, mm-hmm. and that their sexual perversion was derived from the most moral book ever written, the Torah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what to do with that.
What do you do with that?
Storage.
But that's what he says in Romans 7.
Yeah, I know.
When you're reading the Torah, and it's the single most important part of the Torah is the covenant with Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we, you know, that religions that want that same credibility all say that they're Abrahamic religions because of the covenant that Yahweh formed with Abraham. It's the purpose of the Torah is to explain that covenant. And because everything that happens thereafter is Yahweh's consistently honoring his commitments relative to that covenant.
Right.
I mean, it's the whole story. This is the agreement, and this is what what I'm going to do, and it's the whole story right to the very end. His return
to his family, right?
It's for his family, as he said he was going to do, and he's returning for Yisrael and Yehuda on the day of reconciliations to reconcile his relationship just as promised, and he's going to place the Torah right inside of them. And when you read that, Paul says that Torah enslaves, and it was with Hagar, not Sarah. Do you have to be a complete nincompoop to believe anything else the man has to say?
Yeah, you have to be.
To say that God's old plan was inept, incapable of saving, and that he authorized me and gave me loan and exclusive authority over 99.99% of the world to come up with a new plan that contradicts his old plan. How is it that's possible?
Well, you got a pretty funny God if that's the case. Certainly an unreliable one.
Why would you trust an unreliable God with your soul?
What would be the point?
Let's say that Paul's right, which of course he isn't. But let's say he's right. Why would you trust him?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the most amazing thing of all, and I went through this passage a couple of days ago, but I want to rephrase it because it's just so amazing. This is Paul, and it's the second letter to the Corinthians. He says, "For indeed, the one," you realize where he's, this is actually, I'm going to lead into it by reading the statement that causes us to question this masculine spirit. So this is in Galatians. "For indeed, the one having previously functioned in Peter, to an apostle, circumcision," as I think what he meant to say is, "as an apostle of circumcision."
Of circumcision, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not to the circumcised, as an apostle of circumcision, preaching the message of circumcision, which is the sign of the covenant. "It actually functioned also in me to the nations and ethnicities." So, how is that possible?
Well, it's a confused spirit.
Yeah, because, this was the message of uncircumcision versus the message. So you think that, God has two different messages? Contrary to one another? In opposition to one another? Is he schizophrenic? So, Kirk, Paul identified his spirit. And I can assure you it's not the same spirit that worked in Shimon Kefesh. But this is the identity of Paul's spirit, which is rather telling, my friend. He wrote, this is the letter to 2 Corinthians, the town of Corinth, which is at the isthmus of Greece.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I've been there. This was of all the places that Paul spent time, he preached, this would be numero uno. You know, the Galatians soundly rejected him. He went to Thessalonica. They soundly rejected him. You just read the letters. I mean, he's just saying, "Why did you reject me?" in both of them. And then he went to Corinth in the heart of Greece, and they soundly rejected him. And which is why he has these two letters to them. It's just, you know, one he tried to emphasize as much as the other one. He says, "Why did you reject me?" And then of course the letter to Rome. But while he's writing the Romans, it is unlikely that he had much time invested in Rome, other than he claims that he was under house arrest and a prisoner there, which wouldn't exactly make him the most influential guy there in Rome. So it'd be hard-pressed, you know, if you look at Ephesus 2, that's the battleground that Yosha said that, you know, thank God, initially at least, the Ephesians had not...
had rejected.
Yeah, they had rejected. They had not accepted the false apostle who was Paul. And they accepted the first love, which was Yahochanan, and the message of Yahochanan in this debate. Mm-hmm. But so when he's writing the second letter to Corinth, you've got to recognize this was the place that he spent the most time. All right? So this is what he writes. And if you can be a Christian after reading this, then you're just not rational. You know, go away. Don't listen to this program. Don't bother anybody. You know, don't open your mouth. You know, that, what do they say? It's better to be quiet and seem dumb than it is to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Well, once you hear this, if you can't process it and reject Paul and Christianity along with it and your New Testament, I don't know what it takes. He says, because if I might want to brag, if I want to boast or glorify myself, truthfully, I would not be unjustified in doing so. For then I will say, I am presently abstaining, but someone not approaching me might ponder what he sees in me, or something he hears, and of the extraordinary superiority of the revelations. Yeah, therefore, talk about egotistical, without merit, without... Wow. Therefore, in order that I not become overly proud and be overly lifted up, there was given to me a sharp goad, a troubling thorn, a pointed prod used to control dove animals inside my body.
And that's supposed to be the set-apart spirit that Ruach Kodesh is given.
A messenger of Satan. A messenger of Satan. Agelos, Satan.
Now, Yahweh always does that to keep us humble.
In order to strike and restrain me. So that as a result, at the present time, there is the possibility that I might not be conceited. There is that possibility. Okay. So he says he's got a messenger of Satan inside of him.
Mm-hmm. In the body.
Yeah, in the body, man. That means that he is demon-possessed, folks.
Mm-hmm.
That means that the author of half of your Christian New Testament was inspired by Satan, by his own admission. I'm not making this up. Go read it for yourself. 2 Corinthians 12, 6, and 7. By the way, in context, it's far worse. Because what was Paul, you know what Paul was claiming in the midst of that tirade?
Well, he's claiming that he's the messenger of Satan.
No, well, there he is. Now, prior to it, he says that he had an out-of-body, but maybe it was an in-body. Maybe it was imagined, maybe it was real. Experience.
Oh, you mean?
Where he went to the seventh heavens.
Oh, yeah.
So he was out there convorting with the big dogs out there in the seventh heavens. And he said, I don't know if it was in body, I don't know if it was out of body. What he's doing here is he's saying, I had the exact same experience that there's going to be a messenger of Satan, another man who claims to be the messenger of God, who will claim to be demon-possessed just as I have.
Mm-hmm.
And he, too, will base his credibility on having had an experience, he doesn't know if it was in body or out of body, where he went to the seven heavens. His name is Muhammad.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, that's the donkey ride.
That's the wild ass ride, Al Barak, where he flew on that wild ass during the middle of the night where he was sleeping with his child wife, Asia, who was, you know, maybe at that time she may have been 9. He was 54. He claimed in the middle of the satanic verses that he got out of Dodge and he flew from Mecca to Jerusalem on a winged ass. And then from the non-existent temple with all of the Jewish bigwigs prior to flying to heaven through hell. The first stop on the way to heaven was hell. Huh. And now Paul is making the same claim.
Yeah.
So, you know, wow, I'm not going to tell you what I saw there in heaven. I ain't going to tell you whether it was real or not. But that's a superior revelation. Now, read that, Christian. And if you can stay a Christian, then there's no hope for you.
I think you're
irrational.
I think you're absolutely right. How do you deal with that? You cannot deal with that. That is not the light that Yahweh showed Abraham.
No, and when you're dealing with that, when you know that Satan is the adversary, uh-huh. when you're trying to deal with that, realize that there really is a hell. It's a place called Sheol. And that everyone who has led people away from Yahweh goes there as a place created especially for Hasatan, the Sheol, because souls are innate, immortal. And how is Sheol spelled?
It's spelled exactly the same way that Sheol is.
Yeah, it is, isn't
it? It's pointed different because the rabbis didn't like it.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I was reading today, speaking of Sheol, the King Saul.
Mm-hmm.
Muhammad claims that his in the hadith that he had the same number of men going against the caravan at Badr that Saul had going against Goliath, and so I wanted to see just how far he was off, and as it turns out the accounting of the army of Saul at the first encounter, which led to this encounter in front of Goliath, that he had 330,000 men under arms. Muhammad had 300.
Yeah.
Now they're close, right?
Oh yeah.
Anyway, you know what? When I was reading
the enemy is far superior to Muhammad too.
Yeah, the Philistines, they were armed to the, they had a real army. They were
compared to the caravan, you know, those tough caravanners.
Oh, yeah, man, businessmen, overweight businessmen riding on camels. Yeah, they're
real worthy opponent.
Yeah, it's a really worthy opponent. But it was interesting to read about Saul. And Saul made a bunch of stupid decisions. One is he was afraid of the Philistines, terrorized of them. Which is why David had to come in and save the day. And second is that he came to despise his own son and wanted to kill Jonathan because Jonathan wasn't afraid of them and said, what's wrong with you, Dad? I mean, you're making a fool. You're embarrassing everybody here. And Jonathan, with as little as 1,000 men, did what Saul wouldn't do with 330,000. And then it's interesting, he wanted to kill his own son. And the argument that Saul raised that put him in such bad stead was that he told his people that you can't eat. And then he condemned them for eating without having the blood properly drained from the animal. And what he was doing was adding to what God had said. God gave instructions, you know, I don't want you drinking blood. And I do want you to butcher the animal. I want you to do it this way. His army was Torah observant. They did how Yahweh instructed. But Saul added new conditions, like the rabbis that followed him. Like Paul. I got a whole different set of conditions. And he condemned his own people for not adhering to his man-made extra conditions. And, and as a result, of course, he and, you know, in the subsequent battle, he and his family were all killed. And you know, what's interesting also to depict this Paul versus the Torah battle, who was the single most eloquent spokesperson on behalf of the Torah?
Dode, of course.
Dode, yeah, David. Dode, who enters this battle at Goliath, against Goliath. By the way, Goliath means to uncover. So what he's talking about is he's trying to uncover something so that we might understand.
Mm-hmm.
And in this battle against Goliath, of course, Dode, with one stone and a slingshot, prevails. And by the way, in the Septuagint, the height of Goliath is correctly presented. He's 6 foot nine. He's not a giant. Yeah, but 6 foot nine.
A and A's big fella.
Yeah, big fella, 6 foot nine. But, you know, not out of the realm of possibility, 6 foot nine. Anyway, he does it away, and of course, people then show a degree of appreciation to Dode. And what does an insecure man that wants to control do when somebody else is getting attention?
Well, you have to stand up and either destroy him or blow right. yourself up. I mean,
right.
So run for president.
Yeah, run for president. So what is what did King Saul do? He went after Dode trying to kill him.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So you have now the man that God said you choose him. All these bad things are going to happen. And he goes after the man who is the single biggest proponent, the most eloquent proponent of the Torah in human history, trying to kill him. Shaul comes a couple of thousand years later. Well, actually, 1,000 years later. Saul comes 1,000 years later, known as Paul. And he goes after the advocates of the Torah,
too. Are you enjoying shattering myths? Would you like to meet more people like yourself? Look no further. Shattering Myths has just the thing. Go to gcnlive.com/sm. There you will enjoy a special forum for you to communicate with others who also like the show.
I am Yada from Shattering Myths. I want to hear from you. Visit us at gcnlive.com/sm. That's gcnlive.com/sm. There are two other books available to us that... would be of value for those that aren't mired in the muck of Christianity. One, I think, is perfect for agnostics, and it can be found on the same website, clariters.com. It's called Yada Yah. And you recently drew a cover for Yada Yah, Kirk, and we just wrote an inside letter for it. And on Yada Yah, it takes a very different approach. It could care less about Paul. It could care less about Christianity. Mm-hmm. The purpose of Yada Yah was to allow God, in his own testimony, to prove, A, that he exists, and B, that he is God, and C, that he inspired the Torah prophets and Psalms. So every agnostic in the world that says, you know, I don't know if God exists, or every atheist said that God does not exist, or every person just wondering whether or not God exists. Yada Yah, in Yahweh's own words, introduces you to God and proves emphatically, overwhelmingly, convincingly that he exists.
Yeah, that's my dearest Jewish friend. That's his biggest problem. He just has a hard time believing there's a God.
Yeah, and what... Yada Yah does is it just systematically goes through the most important prophecies in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and uses them to demonstrate that there's a 0% possibility that that these things could have been written as they were, and for them not to have been inspired. The math on just 20 of the 2,000 predictions, for example, is chance fulfillment is 1 in 10 to the 56th power. It's there aren't even that many particles in the entire known universe. It begins in an interesting place. It begins with creation, and it dispels the myth that that the religious view of creation is consistent with God's testimony. It isn't. And it presents the creation account in order using God's words, and it demonstrates that he had an exacting chronology of what he did to create the universe and how it expanded from there. He uses the term Big Bang, and he goes in an orderly fashion from the conversion of light into, which is energy, into matter, and then speaks of relativity, speaks of the expanding universe, and then speaks of the creation of life, all in order. And then when he refers to having done all this in 6 days, we can prove that it took place in exactly 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is look at the cosmic microwave radiation that has been left behind since the Big Bang, which has stretched time to 10 to the 12th power in the presence of great energy or light, time slows. And when you compare it to 6 24-hour days, you divide the 14 to 15 billion years the universe has been in existence by 10 to the 12th power, and you get 6 24-hour days.
Pretty remarkable.
Pretty remarkable. And if and that's just one of thousands of proofs. You know, when you read the story of Noah, and God says that he began the flood with an upwelling of salt water from the deep oceans.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the Burkel impact crater that's positioned off the mouth of the Tigris and Euphrates River. And the timing of it, which was 3000 BCE, right at the time of the flood. And then you look at the sediment consequence, what you find is a meteor hit the Earth at the Burkel impact crater, and it would have pushed up a wall of water that would have gone all the way up to the Tigris and Euphrates River, out and up through the Black Sea. You see the Black Sea at that time turn from fresh water to salt water. It's a rise of 500 feet, and then you see the Bosphorus Straits open for the first time with that salt water rushing out into the Mediterranean.
When you were overcome with all this information,
mm-hmm.
And you reject Christianity, did you ever feel like you were walking away because you were walking away from Christianity? You were walking away from God?
No. With every word, I was walking directly to God and away from that which wasn't God.
So why do the words fall on such deaf ears? I mean, no one's asking you to walk away from God. They're asking you to walk to Him.
Yada Yada will take you some time. It's 3,500 pages. But with each page, there's more and more evidence of who Yahweh is and what He's offering so that you can know Him.